Coming up on KUCB News, the City of Unalaska issued two petitions that seek to limit the powers of city officials. And researchers are requesting more Indigenous input for a National Science Foundation initiative. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Maggie Nelson with some local news on Tuesday, February 9th, 2021. A campaign to strip city officials of their ability to make local health mandates is one step closer to getting to Unalaskans for a vote. The city issued two petitions last week that seek to limit the powers of city council, the city manager, and the director of emergency preparedness during an epidemic.
We feel that the local city council has consistently issued resolutions that are completely inconsistent with our values and way of life and rights as Americans.
That's Jeff Manns, one of the primary sponsors of the petitions. He says he, along with Joe Henning and 10 other sponsors, don't want city officials to be able to make mandates without a court order. Manns says Unalaskans' freedom of movement and choice have been compromised by mandatory quarantines, business closures, gathering limitations, and face coverings.
Our new initiative doesn't prevent the city from making recommendations or conducting safety protocols or responses to an emergency or disaster. What it does is require them to go through the courts.
The sponsors have 90 days from the date the petitions were issued to get the required number of signatures from registered Unalaska voters and get the issues on a ballot. They must get 124 signatures on each petition, which is 25% of the number of ballots cast in the most recent general municipal election.
We have no doubt we're going to get the required number of signatures to put this before the voters.
But Vice Mayor Dennis Robinson isn't so sure.
I don't believe they're going to get the signatures that they need. I really don't.
He's against the petitions and says he thinks the city council and city manager have done a great job in keeping Unalaskans relatively protected against COVID-19 through strict local health mandates. And he says those local mandates are critical on an island as remote as Unalaska that's located next to a volcano, is prone to earthquakes and threatened by tsunamis, and is located 800 air miles from the nearest hospital.
This pandemic did not come with instructions. And the next one will not come with instructions either. There may be a whole different set of rules that need to be followed. And I would prefer that those rules were made locally rather than having an outside force, whether it's the state or the federal government, impose those on us.
Robinson says he doesn't think getting a court order to pass local health mandates would be a problem, but that it would be a waste of time, effort, and money to take that extra step. If Henning and Mann's petitions get enough signatures from registered voters, the matter will appear on the next municipal election ballot or in a special election. Meanwhile, the United States and Russia have updated their plan for addressing pollutants across national boundaries in the Bering and Chukchi Seas. The agreement between the United States and Russia, known as the Joint Contingency Plan, has been in effect since 1989. The U.S. Coast Guard is the U.S. agency that does most of this work, working with counterparts at Russia's Marine Rescue Service. Coast Guard Incident Management official Mark Everett says the plan lays out protocols for pollution that spreads from one nation's waters to the others.
This agreement says, essentially, we will agree to notify you. We will agree to request assistance in the response if needed.
Everett says to date, there have been no joint responses to pollution like oil or marine debris along that boundary with Russia. However, he says the two entities regularly conduct exercises and share information on pollution within their boundaries.
There was one recently in Kamchatka on the Russian side that the Russian Federation government shared information with the United States. We offered assistance. They didn't accept the offer of assistance, but that is part of the bilateral agreement to share information about other incidents, even though they may not affect the other party.
Evert says one of the major new features of the latest joint contingency plan is the addition of what's called an international coordination officer.
Someone from potentially the U.S. Coast Guard that, in the event of a joint response, could go over to the Russian side. A Russian representative could come to the U.S. side. And then we have sort of embedded liaison officers.
Evert says he's hopeful that having the new positions will make it easier and more efficient for either nation to share information. He says U.S. and Russia officials plan to meet in the fall to discuss their next exercises related to marine pollution response across national boundaries. One of the National Science Foundation's flagship initiatives for the past few years is called Navigating the New Arctic. It looks at the effects of a warming climate on Arctic communities. However, some in the field believe NSF isn't doing enough to involve Indigenous people who live there. More than 200 researchers from around the country signed an open letter to the foundation last month requesting more Indigenous input within the initiative. As Wesley Early with Alaska's Energy Desk reports, NSF officials say they're taking the critiques seriously.
Margaret Anamak Rudolph is a doctoral candidate at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. In a Nupak woman originally from Fairbanks, her area of study is cross-cultural science education.
How do we kind of improve basically working relationships between researchers and Indigenous communities?
Rudolph is also one of the people who authored the letter to the National Science Foundation. While she welcomes the foundation's initiative, she says it falls short of its potential to include the people who live in the Arctic.
NSF is still centering researchers in navigating the new Arctic instead of centering Indigenous people and kind of what they want and what they need.
The letter from researchers was formed in solidarity with another letter sent last year from four Native organizations: Kuwerik Incorporated, the Association of Village Council Presidents, the Bering Sea Elders Group, and the Aleut community of St. Paul Island. The letter from Native groups outlines several issues that would have been studied more comprehensively if traditional knowledge was included from the start. Those include food security and community infrastructure. It also highlighted problems with requests for proposals. Hedery Huntington is an Eagle River-based independent researcher who's worked with the initiative. He's also one of the main authors of the open letter. He says that requests for research proposals from the National Science Foundation are geared to traditional academic knowledge.
The forms that you fill out work out pretty well if you have a bunch of university degrees and you have some scientific publications and all the standard things that you'd expect of someone with academic training.
Comparatively, Huntington says it's harder to list the traditional knowledge of Alaska Natives, who often are much more informed on their communities and will contribute as much, if not more, to the research.
They confirm what we already know instead of investigating what we want to know.
That's Kena Uluk Ichokiak, one of the more than 200 scientists who signed the letter. Ichokiak is a PhD candidate in technical communication and rhetoric at the University of Utah. An Inupiaq woman from Kotzebue in Norvik, she says growing up, researchers coming into her community would often form questions that Alaska Native people already knew the answers to.
And so it's taken tons of time for academia, right, and the scientists to catch up to us. They're just catching up.
Kuwerik Social Science Program Director Dr. Julie Raymond Yacobian helped write last year's letter. She says oftentimes when Arctic researchers are making research proposals, one of their last steps is to ask for collaboration with tribal organizations instead of including them from the start.
When tribes and tribal organizations and Alaska Native organizations are brought into the process so late in the game, there's really no way for us to effectively collaborate on a truly equitable level.
NSF Arctic Sciences Program Director Colleen Strawhacker says a major initial issue with navigating the new Arctic was that many researchers were eager to compete for grants and proposals, making tribal outreach a lower priority.
Given the feedback from communities, that's clearly it's quite frankly a disrespectful approach to kind of including Indigenous communities in NNA type science.
While NSF officials are still working on a formal response to the letter from the Arctic researchers, Strawhacker says she values the feedback. She says building and strengthening tribal relationships is key moving forward with navigating the new Arctic.
I think it's critical to, if we want to fund the best science in the Arctic, that we need those perspectives. We need perspectives from multiple scientific disciplines, but we need perspectives from Indigenous elders and the knowledge that they have acquired. And I think if we don't do that, then we are doing a disservice to the science and understanding the changes in the Arctic.
At the beginning of February, NSF announced that the Navigating the New Arctic Community offices would be hosted at three universities, including the University of Alaska Fairbanks and Alaska Pacific University, a tribal college in Anchorage. APU President Valerie Nadadaluk-Davidson, a Yupik woman, described the office as a, quote, hub for Indigenous engagement. Raymond Yacobian from Kowarik says she's hopeful that outreach like this, the solidarity between Native groups and researchers shown by both letters, and a push for more Indigenous researchers will produce better outcomes in Arctic research. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Wesley Early in Kotzebue.
The Unalaska City Council meets tonight via teleconference and Zoom. At their regular session, councilors are expected to approve their goals for the fiscal year 2022 budget, as well as approve the mayor's appointments for various city committees. They are also expected to review measures to protect public health during the COVID-19 pandemic. The City Council will meet tonight at 6 o'clock. The community is encouraged to participate in the meeting. People can join Zoom online or telephone in at one of the numbers provided on our community calendar at kucb.org. Comments and questions can also be emailed in advance to City Clerk Margie Veter no later than 5 p.m. today to be read into the record at the meeting. Or you can also listen live here on 89.7 FM or Channel 8 TV. And finally, KUCB will hold a live news program about vaccinations in Unalaska this Thursday at noon. Program guests include IFHS Clinic Director Melanie Chira and Dr. Murray Butner, as well as an APIA health official. If you have questions you'd like to submit, please email them to news@kucb.org by noon tomorrow. Again, that's news@kucb.org. The live program will air on KUCB at noon on Thursday, rebroadcasting at 5. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Maggie Nelson, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. And please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.